We're doing Pirkei Avot together with the Jewish home. We had left off in the third chapter of the ninth Mishnah, and tonight's learning was sponsored in honor of Adam and Rachel Ankari, an extraordinary family, and they're blessed that they should have nachat from their children, and Hashem should be yemaleh mishalot libam letova, should fulfill their desires for good. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa taught, and we saw the beginning of the Mishnah. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa really is coming to teach us the same concept, just on two sides. He says, "Kol shirat cheto kodemet lechochmato, chochmato mitkayemet. Whoever's fear of sin precedes his wisdom, that wisdom will last. V'chol shchochmato kodemet lirat cheto, and whoever's wisdom precedes the fear of sin, in chochmato mitkayemet, then that wisdom will not last." He also said another line, which is very, very similar to that line, Kol shemasav merubin mechochmato, whoever's actions exceed his wisdom, chochmato mitkayemet, his wisdom will last, v'chol shchochmato merubam emasav, and whoever's wisdom exceeds his actions, en chochmato mitkayemet, then his wisdom will not last. And the pshat we had learned last time was Maimonides' pshat, in which the Rambam says that this is a reference to the order of a person's building his own personality. And the Rambam had said that if a person enters a system of perfecting oneself when he is very distant from it, then the system will be so antithetical to his natural inclinations that it will be a tremendous burden and will rarely succeed. Whereas if a person first works on being a good person and a kind person, and then comes to learn the Torah, so then the Torah is a matter of honing who he is, perfecting who he is, but not turning around 180 degrees, and then there's a greater chance at success. And in truth, the Mishnah can be understood in this vein, and the first part of the Mishnah discusses the prohibitions. Fear of sin is a reference to a prohibition, and the second part of the Mishnah, Kol Shema'asav, whoever's actions exceed his wisdom, is a reference to the proactive commandments. And in both areas, one has to try and perfect oneself, or try to align oneself in advancement of one's learning. We try to get our kids used to doing mitzvot and used to staying away from averot before they understand everything. But the truth is that there's a deeper, I wouldn't say deeper, but an alternate understanding in the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah says, fear of sin should precede wisdom, then wisdom lasts. There are two approaches one could take to studying Torah and studying wisdom. One approach is, I want to be a good person, I want to be a kind person, I want to do what's right. Now let me understand. That's fear of sin preceding wisdom. There's another approach that says, yeah, I don't want to sin, that's an interesting point, but I just want to know as much as possible. And when we enter Torah, and it's just about intellectual pursuit, and it does not play a role, and the drive doesn't stem from a desire to do what's right, then all people who entered Torah in that vein ended up ruining their lives. The Torah was not a blessing for them. When they approached Torah that way, they didn't live up to the Torah. They might have become professors of Talmud, might have been very, very successful at their knowledge of Talmud, but their chochmato was not mitkayemet. Their wisdom did not last. The learning has to be coming from a pure place in one's heart, a desire to do what's right. Be it yirat cheto, be it ma'asav. And the second part of the Mishnah says that if you're going to wait till you understand everything before you perform, so then that wisdom isn't going to last either. The actions always have to precede the knowledge. We teach a kid how to make a bracha before he understands what a bracha is. We teach a kid how to do what's right before he understands it. And I think that the same holds true for many areas in life. We have to be prepared to give a certain confidence. A doctor tells you, this is the situation, this is what you need to take for it, and you say, wait, explain to me, doctor, I want to understand why. So sometimes you could do that. It's always good if the doctor prescribes something to go online, do a little bit of research. And sometimes you come back to the doctor and say, wait a second, what about these side effects? It's good to be an intelligent consumer, even in medicine. We've seen numerous times where doctors prescribed, and I know I'm going to get the rap for this, but you guys have to know this. We've seen more than once that people were elderly and doctors prescribed certain medications that destroyed their kidney function, or medication that it was very clear that the side effects would not allow them to have longevity. And when the doctors were questioned, wait a second, what about this and the side effect? The person can't live more than 5 years on this medication without going on dialysis, and it's going to ruin so many other things. So the doctor simply said, well, you think they're going to live 5 years? These are quotes. I mean, we've seen this more than once. So it's a good thing to check out whenever you can. But we also have to know that there are times where your actions are going to have to go beyond your wisdom. You can't always understand what's going on. You can't follow everything. A person does have to act beyond what his understanding is, and that's true for Torah, and that's true in other areas of our lives as well. And now we're moving on to Mishnah Yud. Hu haya omer, he used to say, so we're continuing the quote of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, a tremendous sage, a pious sage, who lived in dire poverty, a small amount of carob. He had a kav of carob. How much is a kav? A kav is about a liter and a half, a little under a liter and a half. That was the food for him and his wife for the week. A liter and a half of carob. You guys imagine that? A bottle and a half, a Coke bottle and a half, right? A liter and a half, less than a 2 liter Coke bottle of carob. That was their food for the week.
What's
carob? Charuvim, carobs. Black fruit. Huaya Omer, he used to say, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa used to say, Kol sheruach habiriyot nochai menu. Whoever people like, whoever people feel comfortable with down below, ruach hamakom nochai menu. You could rest assured that up above, God also feels comfortable with him, so to speak. God is happy with him. People sometimes say, he's a nudnik, and he has no patience, and we have excuses about everyone we can't get along with. But the Mishnah tells us a formula. If down below people like you, then you should know that then chances are God likes you too. But if down below you can't seem to get along with everyone, you could blame everyone for not getting along with them. But at the end of the day, it's a sign. It's indicative of something. And it's very interesting that people don't see this. One of the things that I think it's important to discuss when you guys are dating is discuss the girl's friends. See how she talks about them. See how many friends she has. And how does she speak about her family and their friends? And you'll suddenly hear something. You'll hear a recurring theme. Some people always have something good to say about people. Some people always have something bad to say about people. Some people are always getting into fights. Listen, hear. See who the person is. And a person also has to gauge himself. Our sages said, Misha uv lemata, whoever is loved down below, biyadua shuv lemala. You could rest assured that he's loved up above as well. So this isn't a popularity contest. But a person does have to ask himself, what am I doing right and what am I doing wrong? And if I don't know what I'm doing wrong, then I should try to find out. One of the key tools to making friends is to smile. Smile. Smiling puts other people at ease. And the Gemara tells us that it says in the blessing, Ulven Shinai Mechalav, in the blessing of which tribe? Who was that? Which tribe was that? I don't remember. It says, Chazal learned from that pasuk. Literally, it means teeth whiter than milk. Our sages learned, Ulven shinaim, if you show the white of your teeth to the other person, he feels better than if you gave him milk. Meaning, we sometimes think, let me give him the practical needs. And our sages taught us that our emotional needs are greater than our practical needs. You don't give me a glass of milk, I'll manage. I'll find it somewhere else. But if you don't give me your smile, I might not find that anywhere else. If you don't smile to me, it could be no one else is going to smile to me. We spend our lives searching for acceptance. Every year we do this. I tell the guys about my dark history as a magician. And that I also study fortune telling. Remember this class, right? And and one of the things that all fortune tellers will tell you, and I just discovered this past weekend that there are psychologists who play this game too, then the guy's convinced that he understands them, that one of the things they'll tell you the first time they meet you, and if I did this, I mean, previous classes, I would do this for real. I tell the guys, look, I psychoanalyzed all of you, and now I'm going to tell you something which I know is a common thread between all of you guys specifically, but the truth is, it's a true point for everyone, and that is that there's deep down inside of us what we might call a dark area, a lonely area, a fearful area, a part of us which feels all alone, a part which we don't want to look at. But the truth is, it's a part of the human condition. We all have that area of insecurity, that area where we feel like, do people really like me? If they knew who I was, would they still really like me? If they knew the things about me that I don't like or I'm not proud of myself, would they still really like me? Every person has that area. Now, if you're a fortune teller, you learn how to exploit that area to make good money. But if you're a realistic person, so then you realize that every person has that. And when we approach a person with a smile, when we approach a person positively, we're giving him nutrients, so to speak, for a need that most people don't know how to feed. Meaning we walk around hungry for acceptance, hungry to feel that I'm liked, that someone likes seeing me, that someone appreciates me. And most of us don't know how to feed that. To the extent where I had a very good friend, and after years, mamash, close to a decade, that when I'd see him, I'd say, I'm happy to see you. He once stopped me and asked me, are you serious? I said, what do you mean? He said, you always say, I'm happy to see you. Are you serious? So I was very taken aback by his question. I said, yes, I am serious. But it struck me. We're friends for the better part of a decade. I don't remember if it was 7 or 8 years. And I told him the truth. I was happy to see him. And after all these years, he still wasn't sure if I was sincere. Because people don't say that. And when someone tells it to us, then we have to wonder, is he for real? If we can tap into that, then we can easily accomplish what the Mishnah says, that people will like us. If we can give people a feeling that we like them, the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Chamayim apanim lapanim. The nature of human beings is that it's like looking at your own reflection in the water. When you look at someone else, very often what you're seeing is a reflection of yourself. If you don't like what you see, chances are you're seeing yourself. If you do like what you see, chances are you're seeing yourself. That's not to say everyone's perfect. Obviously, some people are nudniks and some people get on our nerves. And that's true. But in general, we tend to see ourselves in other people. And other people reflect what they see from us. If we can smile at other people, then very often we will get a smile back. And even if we don't get a smile back, we've given them a feeling that almost no one else has given them. And this is something which is indispensable in the home. It's interesting that you'd think that women would learn this. And maybe we'll go off on another tangent here. This is supposed to be the Jewish home class. There's a reason why women don't usually greet their husbands with a smile at the door. Meaning, theoretically, you'd think that's the way it should be, right? So first of all, wrong. Your job is to greet her with a smile. But then you'll ask me, then why doesn't she greet me with a smile? So first of all, because she never heard this class. Put it on, and then maybe she'll greet you with a smile. But there's another reason. She's been spending her whole day alone. And for a husband, when he leaves the house, so then he has a whole world other than his wife. Meaning, everything he does, he might think, gee, I wonder what she would think. I wish I could have her opinion on this. But at the end of the day, the husband has a whole world other than the home. He has friends, he has a job, he has a shear, he has the people he davens with. He has a whole social life outside the house. Yes, he can be a parent, he could be a father, he could be a very active father, he could be a very active husband. But at the end of the day, if his wife yells at him, if his wife gets upset at him, as bad as he'll feel throughout the day, he has other sources of feedback, and he says, okay, but my friends like me, my boss likes me, my workers like me, I have my friends, I have my life, and the home is also part of it. It's a very important part of it, but whether he likes it or not, he has other things that are important in his life. To the woman, she could be the most successful executive. Could be she has a job, could be she has the same positions. But at the end of the day, Hashem created women that the house is the center of their life. And whether she likes it or not, if she feels that he doesn't value me, then that overtakes her whole world. It's very hard for her to get a feeling of self-worth from anything outside the house. She might get it from the kids, she might get it from other things to an extent, but to her world is the house. And it doesn't matter how much she's doing outside the house. To her world revolves around the house and her relationship with her husband. So if during the day she encountered A and B and C and D and E and F and G, that bothered her. Every time she thought, I can't wait to share that with him, and I can't wait to hear how he feels, and I can't wait to get his sympathy. So when he comes home, out comes all the The kids tore my dress today. They poured ketchup on my new outfit. After I finished ironing, they came in with mud all over the clothes. And he's like, hi. She's pouring all the things she wanted to share with him all day long. And it's natural that she wanted to. It stems from a good relationship. But to him, his thoughts are, I just walked through the door. 1 second, we can talk about the whole world's problems in 10 minutes. But she's been waiting her whole day to share it with him. Now, there's another problem that sneaks into this issue, and that is that to us men, when we share a problem, it's because we want someone else to fix it. I'm not going to come and tell you about my problems unless I want you to help me fix them, at least by listening to them, but probably fixing them. So when someone shares a problem with us, the first thought we have is, okay, so what does he want me to do to fix it? It doesn't dawn on us that maybe all he wants to do is share it with us. Our first thoughts, we go into active motion. Okay, what am I supposed to do now? So when a husband walks through the door and all his wife wanted to do is share with him what happened during the day, and he feels like she's throwing on me a heap of things I have to do. I just walked through the door. Let me put down my bag. And that's not what she means to say necessarily. Meaning could be she does want his help, but it could be that she just wants to share with him everything that happened in her day. But in his mind, she just gave me a whole list of problems to solve. Who said she wanted you to solve them? Maybe she wanted to think with you. Maybe she wanted you to empathize with her. Maybe she wanted you to say, boy, you really had a hard day. Maybe you should sit down for a minute. So you put that all together and you have an explosion. He walks through the door. She dumps all the problems. He explodes. I just walked through the door. You can't say hello. What, I don't understand. I understand you had a hard day. I also had a hard day. Why do you think I could solve everything the minute I walked through the door? And boom, you have an explosion from a very normal scenario. One of the ways we can cure that, one of the ways we can remedy that, is if we both try to apply this. Do people feel comfortable with us? Do we smile? Do we give people a warm feeling? Do we give people a feeling of acceptance? And it's something that couples can talk about. A husband shouldn't get pressure just because she's pouncing, dumping all the problems on his head the second he walks into the home. One of the first things I tell couples that are having marital issues is that the husband should not walk home when he finishes work. I say, you get off the bus, sit at the stop for 5 minutes and catch your breath. Don't walk through the door. People make a mistake. They finish work, they want to come home and unload. I say, no, sit at the bus stop for 5 minutes. That's the first piece of advice I tell most couples. You finished work, you get off the bus, you're 5 seconds from the house, sit at the bus stop, don't go home. Sit for 5 minutes, catch your breath, and think about what's about to happen when you walk through that door. And think what you do want to happen and what you don't want to happen. Focus. Refocus. How are you going to enter that house with a smile? If need be, go get yourself a milkshake, eat a piece of chocolate, listen to some music, do something to put yourself in a good mood so you can walk into the house after you've calmed down. Us men, we walk into the house, we want to walk into the castle. We want to calm down, we want our cup of coffee or tea or cake or whatever waiting for me. I just got home. No. So sit at the bus stop and catch your breath. And when you walk into the house, be prepared to accept whatever is going to come with a smile. And fulfill this Mishnah. And remember that if people are happy with you, if people are comfortable with you, then God is also happy with you. God wants to see how we are with our fellow man. And the first person God judges us with is our spouse. Rabbi Dosa ben Arkina Somer, Rabbi Dosa the son of Arkina says, Sheina shel shacharit. He's going to list a bunch of things that take a person out of this world. So to speak, they're destructive to a person's world. They're destructive to a person's spiritual world. They're destructive to a person's world in general. And the first one he lists is sleeping late. And all these things are practical pieces of advice for life. And in our learning is focused on the home. So they're also very, very good pieces of advice for the home. It's not healthy for the home that a husband sleeps late. It's not healthy for a number of reasons. Let's assume he can be productive in his life. Let's assume he has a job where he could show up at 11 or 12 and no one's going to say boo. Let's assume it's not a question of his productivity. There are a few points. Point number one is, how does his wife view him? Every wife is entitled to feel like her husband is a successful individual. And every husband is entitled to feel that his wife is successful. A wife that sees her husband in pajamas at 9:30 in the morning usually does not feel like he's a very productive and successful individual. Again, different strokes for different folks. If it works for you, I'm not getting involved. But for most people, you know, he has one day where he takes a day off, whatever, but if he's consistently getting up late, it's hard for her to feel like she should respect him. And every woman is entitled to feel like her husband is someone worth respecting. Every woman needs to feel that. Now, it could be he's a fisherman and she'll value his fishing. It could be a lot of things. Whatever works for the couple. But you have to know that it's something you as a husband have to take into account. A husband can say, but my boss doesn't mind, my job is fine, why does she care? If she cares, she's entitled to care. So that's point number one. Now, let's say she gets out of the house at 5 o'clock in the morning. She's up and at him, she's going and doing her thing. So she doesn't see he's getting out of bed at 9 o'clock in the morning. If she doesn't see it, it doesn't bother her, so then it's between him and God. Shachris and Kriya Shema and Minyan, I'm not getting involved, that's your spiritual world. But let's say she's home. Let's say she's a homemaker. Let's say she's up at 6 o'clock feeding the kids, dressing the kids, getting them out the gun, getting them on the bus, filling out their homeworks with them, writing the notes to the teachers. And then at 8 o'clock, after she's had a very bustling morning, she comes back and she's like, Chaim, time to get out of bed, you know, Shachris, it's 8:15. She's already worked for 2.5 hours. And he's like, another hour, we'll talk in an hour. He's back and he's sleeping. Let's forget our first point for a minute. Let's say that the productivity issue is something that she's fine with. She knows that he goes to work, he works in computers, he's a genius. I have a friend like that. He at least this is what he tells me. I don't know, but he tells me that he does. When he shows up to work at 11 and he works till 3, he accomplishes more than all his counterparts who have been working there all day. And so his bosses are fine with that. They fired him once for coming late. When he left, the company fell apart. So they rehired him and said, he said, on my terms, I show up whenever I want. So they had to buy in because this is what he told me. I don't know. Okay, fine. It works, it works. And his wife can respect him for that. Fine. But then we run into another point, and that is that most couples can have a healthy relationship with a certain amount of time together. When you cross that threshold and they start spending more time together, for most couples it doesn't work. The relationship starts to explode, and you say, but wait a second, if we met, shouldn't we be able to spend all day and all night together? The answer is no. The answer is you can match perfectly, and still, if you're going to spend too much time together, the relationship won't last. It won't work. It's not only it won't be great, it'll be terrible. You're going to be, she's going to be disgusted with him, he's going to be disgusted with her, he's going to get on her nerves, he'll get on his nerves. He needs to find a job, go to the public library and work on the internet from there. But he needs to make phone calls, so figure something else out. Find a friend, go to your in-laws, go to your cousin, go somewhere where you could stay out of trouble and you could do your work, but don't be home. If you're both going to be home, that's a formula for disaster. So the Mishnah tells us that sleeping late in the morning is problematic. Yes, it's problematic in our personal lives. It's problematic between us and God. But we have to realize it's also problematic from the perspective of marriage. A, because will the wife be able to value her husband? And B, because it's just not healthy for a couple to be together too much. The Ein Shetzoraim, a person who goes drinking in the afternoon. If a guy takes his cup of schnapps in the morning and then he goes and he drives the public bus, so we got a problem, right? But he's being productive. It's not something that's stopping him. If a guy finishes his day with a cup of wine and goes to sleep, okay, fine. It is healthy for the heart. It isn't healthy for the heart. To each his own. But if a guy comes midday and takes his cup of wine, so you have to ask yourself, what's he doing? Is he cutting his day in half? What's it good for? It's not good for anything. So that's a prime example of a person who lets his animalistic desires overtake his capacity to be productive. So that's one of the things that will take a person out of the world. A person has to think, how can I be productive in this world? You stop your day midday, take a cup of wine, what's the rest of the day going to look like? So that's the next point. And it's interesting, we had a guy here who was very successful, and then he completed his giyur, and he was successful. And then, I don't remember, I think he decided on his own that it's not such a Jewish thing to do to go every night to the bar. And I didn't even know he had this issue. So he comes to me after a few weeks and he says, you know, a few weeks ago I decided it's not such a Jewish thing for me to go to the bar every night. So I stopped going to the bar. And suddenly I have a lot more time in my life. Suddenly I realize that there's a lot more I can accomplish. His whole life changed. He suddenly realized he has many more hours to the day. So although the Mishnah speaks about wine in the afternoon, we don't live our lives the way they did in Chazal's time. Our afternoon is maybe 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the evening. Because we don't go to sleep till 10, 11 o'clock at night. So we still have many productive hours. A guy that goes to the bar at 6 o'clock in the evening is doing what they did in Chazal's day. That would be called going to the bar in the midday. Because by us, 6 o'clock in the evening is not the end of the night. We still have many productive hours. And I'll just mention, if a person sees that he's having trouble overcoming this, he should get help. Because the people who overcome this find that they have much more productive lives. They gain many hours to their lives. And they also gain clarity in their lives. Like he told me, he said, I hadn't realized how much of my life I was drowning in the bottle. It just became a habit every night. He drowned his night in the bottle. And suddenly when he didn't, so there was more time to think, more time to advance his career, more time to advance his life. And again, he was very productive. I didn't even know he was doing this every night he was here. I didn't know. He shared it with me a long time afterwards. V'sichat ha'iladim. An idle chatter with kids. Meaning, of course, there is time when a person has to have idle chatter with his kids and he has to talk to them about the sports and everything else they do, but with a limit. And when a person invests time in it, and again, it reaches a point of imbalance where it's affecting his productivity, he has to realize that's removing him from the world, as the mission is going to conclude. V'shivat v'teknes yotshena me'aretz. And getting together with the common folk who speak nonsense. They're busy talking things that are pointless. It's like you come to a Shabbos table and some people are talking productive things and other people are just talking politics. So he should do this and he should do that and you do... What's the point? Are you going to do anything? What's the point? Talk at Bar Torah, you got a mitzvah. You talk politics, what's the point? Okay, so you want to talk politics, but to a limit. The Mishnah describes, "Bateknes yotshena me'aretz," that when the common folk gather, they're going to talk lashon hara. They're going to talk things that are not clean. So that's an example of something that motzin tadam in olam removes a person from the world. And Chazal cautioned us in these areas too, that whether a person likes it or not, his wife is gauging him. His wife is looking. A wife is interested in seeing who her husband is. The Gemara says even the argument the person has in the Beis Medrash is something which, if he brings home, becomes part of the wife's gauge of her husband, and Chazal didn't recommend it. Chazal said, if you have an argument with your friend in the Beis Medrash, don't bring it home. There Chazal gave a different reason, but at the end of the day, a person has to know that he has to maintain a certain level in the home. And if he doesn't, he can't expect his wife to respect him. And it's not fair to the wife, because the wife wants to respect her husband. It's one of the reasons why I don't like that people bring newspapers home. Let's assume that the newspapers were modest. Let's assume that the information there was accurate. Let's assume that the informations were not intent on getting you to be anti-religious. All of those are incorrect assumptions in this country. But even with all those assumptions, what happens when a guy brings his newspaper home? So let's take a Shabbos evening or a Shabbos morning. You finish the meal, and you're dying to read that article. I mean, they make the headlines in a way that you want to read it, you want to know. So you start reading it, and your wife says, could you help me clear the table? And we all know what the answer is. In a minute, right? And that minute can last a very long time. She clears the table, and you're still holding by that minute. She's washing the dishes and you're still holding by them. And she's put the food away and you finally finish the article and you remember, hey, wait a second, I have a wife in this house. So you put down the newspaper and you tell yourself we have to spend some time together and you come to the kitchen and you see her seething and what are you so upset about? I just took a minute. You don't want me to read the article? So it's the same thing with the internet. I think people have to think about when they use the internet. If people come home at night and they sit down on the computer... So I've seen many, many couples where this led them to counseling. And guys, a counselor takes 350, 450 shekel an hour. Those are the cheap ones. So you got to figure, is it worth it? I recommend that people don't turn on the computer when they get home at night. You have to look at your email? Okay, so look at the email 5 minutes before you leave work. unless that's going to cause you to stay at work for another 2 hours. Look at the email in the morning when you have an in time, when you know you have to leave to work. But if a person comes home at night, then supper can pass him by, and the whole night could pass him by, and he never had a minute to say hello to his wife because he was on the internet. There are a lot of interesting things on the internet. So it could be the internet, it could be the newspaper. And at the end of the day, the wife is very realistic. She says, what'd you gain out of all that? So that was more important than spending time with me. So we have to think about the impression we're giving, not only what are we doing with our time, but also the impression we're giving with our time. If you had time to read the newspaper, why are you telling me you want to go out to a shiur now? you had time for the newspaper. You should have time to help me with the dishes, help me with the shopping. And that's a fair claim. So this can go both ways, by the way. I mean, everything we're saying about the wife can also be applied to the husband. Only I think husbands are more okay with their wives sleeping late in the morning. Husband knows that his wife is working late at night and she doesn't have to get up and do all those other things. I think it's more a gauge of the husband. I think the husband has to be more careful in these areas. Ordinarily, a husband knows that his wife is putting herself out and he doesn't gauge her based on the time she gets out of bed in the morning. That's not the point by him. But that could very much be the point by her. Okay, so what do we see today? We saw that a person's actions should exceed their learning. A person shouldn't limit his actions to what he understands to that which he's learned. We saw that a person should gauge how he is socially and realize that gauge is also a barometer for his relationship with heavens, how heaven views him. And we said that part of that is the smile, that the way a person greets other people. We all have this intrinsic desire to be accepted in society, and when we can greet a person warmly, we're giving him something that most other people don't give him, and that's even more so in the home. And then we described productivity, that a person who is going to sleep late, drink in the middle of the day, spend his time with idle chatter with kids, join groups of people that spend their time talking idly, ultimately that removes a person from the world, and that also can cause a person to be looked down upon by their spouse, and that part of marriage, and a fair part that a wife can expect, is to have a husband she can look up to.